And welcome back. It's midday. By the way, looking ahead, as soon as this little football game is played on Sunday, many sports fans in Baltimore will turn their attention to the Baltimore Orioles. We've got a new manager and a host of young talent. And as is always the case at this time of year, despite the train wreck that was last season, hope springs eternal. Pitchers and catchers report to spring training in 2 weeks. So coming up tomorrow on Midday, a conversation about a Baltimore boy who captured the imagination of the sports world in the 1920s and who has sustained interest and fascination ever since. Babe Ruth is the subject of a new biography by the author and journalist Jane Levy. It's a fascinating look at the huge impact the great Bambino had, not only in the game of baseball, but on popular culture in general. The book is called The Big Fella, Babe Ruth and the World He Created. Jane Levy joins me tomorrow on Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and now Wanda Draper joins me here in Studio A. Since 2016, she has served as the executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. In her 2 years as executive director, Wanda Draper has, by most accounts, breathed new life into the Lewis Museum. Last year, for the first time since 2008, the museum was able to meet the state's mandate to generate $2 million in revenue. Last June, the museum launched a new website, and the number of students who visit the Lewis has increased by a lot. Wanda Draper has announced her retirement next month. The board of the Lewis Museum has announced the appointment of Jackie Copeland as its new executive director. Wanda Draper, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And listeners, we'd love to hear your take on the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. When's the last time you went? What did you think when you did go? And what would you like to see the museum do in the future? Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. So let's go back to when you took over. You're certainly no stranger to the museum. You were on the original board of directors before there was even a building, when this was an idea.
That's correct.
Back in the day. So it was founded 13 years ago. You started as its executive director in 2016. What did you find when you came into the job?
I found an amazing institution, but a lack of management. So the major issue there was the one thing I can do.
Because you don't come from the museum universe.
I do not come,
come from the museum universe.
I come from the corporate universe. But what I also bought was a love for the museum because I had served on the founding board. And when I served on the board, the first 5 years, we had nothing but an idea. And so to go from an idea to a $38 million, 82,000 square foot facility, it's pretty amazing. So I knew what the original dream and vision was, and I knew what it could be, and I knew what it wasn't. And so I asked a number of people in the business community about going to the museum, and they were like, Wanda, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. No one told me to do it. But in my heart...
Because people really did have concerns that it was wobbly and could, you know...
People did have concerns, and
crash.
And they were rightful to have those concerns because those concerns did exist. But I just felt the foundation of what was there could be corrected. Most people didn't see that. And they were like, no, it's a black. I mean, one person, a very good friend of mine, said, it's a black hole. Let me tell you what you do. I know you have this whole guilt thing about that museum because you were on the founding board, but you need to write a check and say you've done your part and walk away and live and go live happily ever after. Unfortunately, I couldn't do that. And so against all of the professional advice, I went. And I really just believed I could make it better. And that was my whole goal. And when I walked in, I pretty much knew what to expect. There were some surprises, but there was significant debt, and not debt from doing the wrong thing. Like, for instance, bringing in very nice exhibits was a great thing to do for a museum, but it was a wrong thing to do for a museum that didn't have the money to pay for them. So there was tremendous debt on the line of credit as a result of bringing in exhibits. Unfortunately, they weren't the right exhibits to move the museum forward because they didn't pay for themselves either by admission, which most exhibits don't, but they didn't pay for themselves so that the museum was in a deficit spending mode. So I knew two things. One, I had to fix the deficit spending. And two, the museum was organized to operate the way it did in 2005. So obviously in 2016, there needed to be a reorganization. So I came in and met with all of the staff, each individually. I looked at all of their job descriptions, and then I did a total reorganization and figured this was the way forward. And as it turned out, I was right. It was the way forward. So we reorganized, brought in a management team that fit where the museum was in 2016, and we were successful in moving it forward.
What do you think it is about your experience? For many years, you were doing community relations at WBAL Television. It's not like you'd never been in a nonprofit. You'd worked for the National Aquarium at one point in your career. But when it comes to that, I mean, do you think the problems before emanated from the fact that there were sort of museum people in charge? I mean, there are people that people have a lot of respect for, David Terry, Skip Saunders. There are people who, you know, excellent scholars, excellent people, highly respected in the museum community. But I wonder if this is a cautionary tale for other museums and other arts institutions that are run by people who know the art and know the place and value of artistic institutions in communities. But a business is a business. I mean, as you say, it's a $38 million building, and it's a big building, and you got to keep the railroad running.
Exactly. And I think that's the issue. And what I took there that was totally different was I was not the scholar of the previous executives, and the scholarly part that they brought to the museum was great. But what it needed was the business part, which is what I could bring. And I didn't go there making pretend or trying to convince anybody that I could do that. That's why I hired Jackie.
Because Jackie Copeland.
Jackie Copeland was the museum professional. So she brought that to the table, and what I brought was the business part to the table. So it took both sides to do it. But the more difficult side was the business side. And there were some very difficult decisions to make, you know, to reorganize, to replace people, to terminate jobs that really we no longer needed. It would have been nice to have them, but we really needed to function without them. And so when I came in, I did a total reorganization. I cut $400,000 out of the existing budget so that we would have some wiggle room to move and to grow, and put people in positions that we really needed at the moment. And so my goal was to have us make the match and become financially stable. That's not something that most nonprofits think about. They think about being what their mission is. And a mission is great, but if the mission's not funded, there is no mission. And it's very difficult to get that message across in the nonprofit community. And a lot of nonprofit people were looking at me with suspect. She doesn't have a PhD. She's never done this before. But what I had done was run a successful operation. So I knew that that was what was needed, and I felt that was what I could do. And once we did that, we just saw the life come back into the museum. And it took a lot of creativity to do it. There were even some things to do that I'd never done before. I mean, the classic example was Jackie came in to me and said, "It's Jacob Lawrence's 100th birthday. This is an African-American museum. We have to do a Jacob Lawrence exhibit." Well, I didn't know that, but I agreed with that. But the other thing I said was, my rule is, we will celebrate Jacob Lawrence day and night when we raise $100,000 to pay for the Jacob Lawrence exhibit. Upon which Jackie just turned and walked out of my office, because as a museum professional, you do what's best for the museum. And then you worry about the money. I worry about the money first. And so it was a total different approach. I mean, I can't tell you how many times staff said to me, "We've never done this before. This is not the way we do it." And I said, "You may not have, but today, moving forward, this is the way we do it." And I established a theme, and our theme was better. We can do better. And better meant we were going to be fiscally sound and meet our mission. And so Jackie came back into my office and said, "We do need to do this Jacob Lawrence exhibit, and this is how we do it. We do it by calling it Maryland Collects Jacob Lawrence, and we ask Maryland art collectors to loan us their work." I'm like, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of artwork. Okay, you go do that. She came back and she walked into my office and said, "Okay, these people are your neighbors." So we asked them and they said yes. And And she said, and you know this
person. And
it's
collectors not just from Maryland, right? But from
Maryland collectors.
So Maryland Collects.
That's why it's called Maryland Collects. It's about people in Maryland. And not only people in Maryland.
So these are beautiful paintings that are hanging on people's walls.
Yes.
That you're asking them to just lend them to the Lewis Museum for a particular period of time.
Yes. And these people did that. They stepped up. And we had 12 pieces from Eddie and Sylvia Brown. We had pieces from individuals, from the former chief judge of the state of Maryland. Just people we asked who every single person we asked said yes and donated their works and saved us close to $100,000 in rental fees. The exciting part
Because the traditional way of doing this is you go to these other museums who have this stuff in their collection and then you pay a fee to borrow it
for
a
particular
time.
Exhibit for 3 or 4 months. So we begged the exhibit. We got it. Jackie curated it. It was amazing. People came from around the world, Kosovo, Asia, Jamaica. I was just shocked at the people I would meet in the galleries coming to see this exhibit. We had over 50 pieces, and we had more people offering to donate to us. So we have created just a whole new idea here. So now, currently on exhibit is the Romare Bearden exhibit. And there's 70 pieces of Romare Bearden. All from Maryland. And again, we gave back 14 pieces that we just did not have room to exhibit. And we have people still saying, I was not asked if you wanted to use my piece. So it's very exciting. And the other thing, it excites Marylanders and excites people to come and see what people they know have in their collections. And the stories that people tell and the stories about how people right here in Maryland collected those pieces and their interaction with the artist. All of those things make the exhibit far more meaningful, far more exciting, far more interesting, and attract more visitors.
Wanda Draper is the outgoing executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and have more with Wanda Draper. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can send us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. If you just joined us, my guest is Wanda Draper. A few weeks ago, she announced her retirement as the executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture, effective on February 12th. By the way, on Saturday, the Lewis Museum will hold a free Romare Bearden Family Day from 11 to 3. There'll be performances by Muse 360 Arts. It's a wonderful dance ensemble read by their terrific director, Sharana Christmas. And there will be tours of the gallery and lots of hands-on activities for the kids. So it's a great way to see the exhibition we were talking about before the break. It's this big exhibition at the Lewis of the great Romare Bearden. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. The proximity of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum to the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C. How has that affected the museum so far, and how do you think it's going to affect the museum moving forward?
I think the best thing it does for the museum is it makes everyone feel comfortable with knowing what is an African-American museum. I mean, most people, you know what a children's museum is, you know what a streetcar museum is, you know what every kind of museum is. But a lot of people don't feel comfortable. It's like, what is an African-American museum? Am I going to be intimidated? Is it going to be scary? Is it going to hurt my feelings? And what the National Museum did was show people that that's not what it does at all. What it does is introduces you to a history that you may not have experienced before. And as it turns out, it's American history. And we're all more alike than we are different. So it has been wonderful for us. The other thing is it has given some of our museum professionals an opportunity to do every museum professional's dream. And we have probably around 16 people who've worked at the Lewis now at the National Museum. And Lonnie Bunch came to our board meetings.
He's
as
the director
founding
of
board.
The National Museum.
Mm-hmm. And from us, he got the concept of raising the money first. He got the architect from us. and now he has, you know, several of our professionals. And it's a great partnership between us. The other thing is people go there and then they want to come see us because we're different. And during the shutdown, when they were shut down, people had visits scheduled, and so they were calling and they were coming to see us. So it's been great. There was a lot of fear that, oh my God, now people aren't going to come to us because they're going to go there. If we were replicating and doing the exact same thing, it would be different. But what we're doing is Maryland history, which you can't find very much of. So it gives people an opportunity to see just an isolated state. To see just what happened with African Americans and their history in the state of Maryland. And so it has been very helpful for us, and we enjoy a very good relationship with this. But as well as we do with the Smithsonian, we are a Smithsonian affiliate, so.
Yeah, but you haven't found that there's been an attenuation of attendance here in Baltimore because Washington is right down the road for a traveler from New Jersey or Pennsylvania or Connecticut.
Right.
Or something.
Oftentimes, particularly those going south will come see us. We'll do both.
Because they have to pass through Baltimore to get to Washington anyway.
Exactly.
Explain to folks what the status of the Lewis Museum is in the nonprofit world. It's not a completely separate entity from state government, for example. That's why there's this mandate that the museum generate $2 million a year in admissions and whatnot. So this is a combination. It's a state and it's partly a state agency and partly a private institution. How's that work?
So we are an asset of the state. It was founded as the Maryland Museum African American History African American History and Culture Corporation. So that is the corporation that actually runs the museum. The museum is called the Reginald F. Lewis Museum by way of a donation from Reginald F. Lewis's widow, Loida Lewis. She donated $5 million to establish an endowment fund to support the museum. And in exchange for that, she was giving the naming right to the museum. But we are not state operated, but we are state funded. So we receive 50% of our budget from the state of Maryland.
So that's different than the Walters Art Museum or the Baltimore Museum
correct.
Of Art or the Contemporary AVAM or something like that.
That's correct.
Yeah. And is that a good thing? I mean, is that a help, a hindrance? Is it neutral? What do you think?
It's a good thing. Because we are basically the archive for the state of Maryland African American history. So it is a good thing for us to be connected to the state. Being connected with the state helped us to build such a huge facility, and we are able to conserve the objects and to preserve the history, and we have the space to do that. Otherwise, if we were a private museum, it probably would have been a much smaller operation, but our connection to the state helps us to do that.
So your advice for your good friend and successor, Jackie Copeland. I mean, interestingly, the board brought you in as a business person to, you know, fix the management, change the management. I've known Jackie Copeland for years. She's been at the Walters Art Museum for a long time. We've worked together when I was in the music business. She is a museum professional. So it's interesting that the board is going back to something of a standard modus operandi. What do you think? I mean, are the financial problems sort of fixed and now you can just sort of move forward in a more traditional way?
Well, the advantage of Jackie is multifold. One, she is a museum professional, but two, Jackie understands the business side. And so you kind of get both in Jackie. And the third thing is it's continuity, because Jackie came on board with me day one. One day Jackie passed me and said, oh, congratulations, I heard you're going to the Lewis. And all of a sudden I thought, I need her. And I called her.
By the way, you're coming too.
And so Jackie had retired from the Walters and was loving life. And so I went and I laid out for her. I mean, I took her a whole kitchen table. Her husband went to work and came back and I was still in their house. And I was laying out for her what I thought the issues were and getting her advice. And so she said, I'll come in and help you. So she volunteered at first. And then there was so much we really wanted to do, particularly with the education department. So she agreed to come on as a consultant for 3 months, and she came on and helped us reset the education department, because what we were doing in 2005 was not applicable in 2016, and Jackie understood that and knew exactly where we wanted to go and how to get us there. And so finally she came on full time. So what Jackie brings is a museum professional with immense experience. She understands the business side. She has the connections, and she brings on the continuity of having been there for 2.5 years and been through all of this with me, because I would not have been able to do what I had to do on the business side without having her do the program and the education side. So she knows everything, and she is able to, you know, move it forward. As a matter of fact, she will be testifying before the General Assembly, which is something that she's familiar with. She's done it many times for the Walters. So the museum is in good financial shape. It is on a great trajectory, but Jackie was a major part in getting it there. So she's just able to continue without having the disruption of bringing in somebody new who has to learn the operation, who has to learn the market and the players. She has it all.
Got about a minute left, so let me ask you to briefly say, at this moment in American history, where the racial climate is certainly different than it was in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama as president, where the situation in our city with a police department under a consent decree from the Justice Department, what is the central contribution that the Lewis Museum can make to that conversation and to that situation?
I think the central contribution that the Lewis Museum can make can be a place for those discussions to be held. And we've done that. We've had discussions on the whole Kaepernick taking the knee. We've had discussions on the police department. Actually, the mayor made her announcement of the current police commissioner that they're considering from the museum. We have had a number of programs, but most of all, what we can do is we can teach children about their history so that they understand where they come from and know where they're going.
Well, Wanda Draper, we know that you are going into retirement. We hope you enjoy that, and thank you for all the work you've done for the Lewis and for many other organizations here in town.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Best of luck to you.
Thanks,
Wanda
Tom.
Draper. In 2 weeks, she will retire as the executive director of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture, and the museum has appointed Jackie Copeland as her successor. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, conversation about the life of baseball legend and Baltimore native Babe Ruth. The award-winning sports writer and best-selling author Jane Levy joins me to talk about her book, The Big Fella, Babe Ruth and the World He Created. That's coming up tomorrow. Thanks to The Diz for providing lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Stay tuned for Here and Now. That's coming up next after the news. On behalf of the entire Midday team, thanks for listening. Have a great day.